you're working from home. You settle in with a cup of coffee, ready to get the day started. Before you look at that to-do list, turn on your favorite Odyssey sports station on your smart speaker. We'll keep you company and bring you the latest updates from your teams while you tackle your inbox or get ready for another meeting that probably could have been an email. Power through the workday with the entertaining sports coverage you love from the local voices you trust. Just ask your smart speaker to play your favorite station.
From the mind of a two-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Some people like Chris Emma.
Some people do like Chris Emma. We're three of them. Matt Spiegel, Dan Bernstein, and Barry Rosner.
I think I saw Chris Emma on Rhino Day up in the press box very late in the day. I had been, well, let's just say hammered for some time at that point.
Let's just
Near the end of the day, I went to visit the press box.
Always a good idea.
Fall off a horse.
Just to see if I knew anybody.
Did you know the mayor of Skokie, just in case?
I think I saw Chris Emma was the point I was going to make, but yeah. I couldn't swear to it at this moment.
Chris Emma, you probably were not hammered in the press box on Ryan Sandberg Day. Do you remember seeing Barry Rosner?
You know, it all makes sense now because I didn't think I would ever see Barry Rosner in a press box again. And I just turn around and he's right behind me. He's saying hi. We're catching up. We had a great conversation, Barry. So the highlight of the season. The pants were off. Mine were on. His were off.
Okay,
you never know with this guy. But, yeah, it was wonderful to see you, Barry.
Okay, so that did happen. All right.
It did happen. That was not a bad dream for you.
I was not up there for very long. I wanted to beat the traffic, so I got out of there. But nice.
Hey, Barry, hold all of these thoughts for a second. Chris Emma has the latest on the Chicago Bears for us here on The Score on the afternoon show. Tell us what's going on. What happened up there today, Mr. Emma, sir?
Last practice of training camp / preseason. They are done. They are off for the rest of the weekend. Back to it week one. They got after for just about 2 hours of work today. You saw some good moments from Caleb Williams. You saw a little bit of shuffling for the offensive line, but kind of intentional. Nobody was hurt. One guy was hurt. We'll get to that in a bit, but they were kind of shuffling guys in and out and building up different combinations. So an efficient day of work. It's noticeable when you go from that 90-man limit down to the 53, and it just kind of looks different out there. But one more for the road. They get back to it next week, and week one preparation is well underway.
We have talked plenty about the offense and plenty about Caleb Williams. How good can this defense be, Chris?
You know, you talk to these guys and they keep going on with that common goal, which is to be a top five unit in this league. And what they mean by that, they're very specific with that kind of goal. They're talking about turnovers. They obviously run defense was one of the best in the league last year. They want to be dominant in the pass defense as well. They want to have that kind of defense that changes games. And you talk to any of these players, but Jaquan Brisker in particular, I followed up with him today about that goal, kind of how it's resonated as he talks to his teammates and this defense really kind of builds that continuity. I was curious to hear what Jaquan Brisker would say. So here is Jaquan Brisker.
Yeah, really just being where our feet are every single day. Just being where our feet are, you know, guys just being consistent. We just got to continue to work hard. And then where I see ourselves today is really just, you know, continue to, you know, get better every single day. You know, we're not where we need to be, but, you know, we're going to get there and, you know, we're going to be a top five defense. And we expect that this year, especially with a rookie quarterback, you know, we're going to have a lot of big shoulders. So every day is, you know, big for us.
What have you seen through one course of camp that leads you to believe you guys can be that top five unit?
Just, you know, our chemistry, the way we're flying around, the way we're making plays, but really the preseason. Even though we weren't all out there, you could just see it. The preseason, you know, showed it. We never looked like that my first 2 years. I remember my first 2 years when Mahomes came in here, Josh Allen came in here. They drove down and scored the first touchdown. You look at our first series, it stops after stops. And you look at practice, it stops after stops, turnovers after turnovers. So there's a difference in this defense, and we're not there yet, but we'll continue to get better.
Top five defense, says Jaquan Brisker. The top five defenses in the NFL last year. I mean, you're talking about some of the absolute best teams in the NFL. And if we want to do it by scoring defense, I'm struggling to actually find the stats that I was looking for. So trust me, top five would be very good.
Personally, neither one of us is paying attention.
Neither of you guys are helping me at all.
I wasn't listening to anything that just happened.
No, he was pointing at seeing Grady Sizemore on the television. Like, yeah. Oh, wow. Grady Sizemore.
Then we were watching Xander from left to 14 at the Tour Championship. So I don't know anything that just happened.
All right, good job.
Nor do I care.
Well, I think you should.
Emma's mad at me. Emma's mad because I couldn't remember the name of the Bears long snapper earlier today.
I was yelling at my radio, Dan. I know. Yelling into the speakers.
I know, because you sent me a text because I asked you specifically about it to figure out what's going on, and I didn't repay that respect by remembering the dude's name, even though he's from Chicago and went to Notre Dame.
Scott Daly.
You were off like five syllables too. You're going like an eighth syllable
like
name.
Sean Scott Daly. No, it's just Scott Daly.
Scott there. Daly.
I think I forgot
I
it again.
Josh, at some point, and I was worried too because I'd been reporting it would be Scott Daly, and I was worried I was totally wrong. You were throwing some weird name out there that I'd never heard, and I was worried for a second.
He's, of course, a Patrick Manley disciple, is Scott Daly.
Not in football, though.
No, just in terms of IPAs and El Caminos.
Golf.
The top five defenses in the NFL last year in terms of scoring, Ravens, Chiefs, Niners, Bills, Cowboys. Yeah, that'd be nice. Do you think it's plausible, Chris?
Yeah, absolutely. Look, they got continuity on that side of the football, and that's going to go a long way. Now, the key for this group, as we know, is going to be up front, and we saw the difference a guy like Montez Sweat made. You need more than that. You need Jervon Dexter to really take that step. You need complementary rushers as well, whether that's Austin Booker, Daniel Hardy, Dominique Robinson's a name we keep hearing. Obviously, you want more from DeMarcus Walker as well. So you need to have that group working front to back, pass rush to coverage, and really working in concert together. I think they got one of the best secondaries in the league. If you want to play skeptical, and you should at this point, you haven't played a game yet, you want to see that defensive line really take shape. I think they got the potential to do it. I think that defensive line can really be strong for this group, and I think this defense absolutely can be a top five unit, but you want to see this group play as one and really get after it.
I'm curious about the running backs and DeAndre Swift, because we've talked a lot about Caleb. We've talked a lot about what the overall views are and the expectations for the team. What are DeAndre Swift's expectations for the team and for himself?
He's a curious guy. It's been really interesting hearing him talk. He doesn't like talking about his 3 years with the Lions. And I don't know if that's a personal thing or just settling in with now a division rival here with the Bears. He's fine reflecting on his time with the Eagles, but he doesn't like talking about the Lions. And I guess he can understand that a bit. So DeAndre Swift talked today about a bunch of different things, but talked about in particular what he sees of this team, his view of the Bears when he was in the other side of the division in Detroit. And then I kind of pressed him a bit more on those individual goals. So here is DeAndre Swift. You're going to hear a couple cuts from him in one.
Individually, I'm a team success. I feel like that's first and foremost. If we win it, I'm going to be a big part of that in some way, shape, or form. So, team success first.
When you were playing for a different team in the division, what was your perception of the Bears from the outside?
My perception was a team that always plays hard. That's kind of how my perception was. But I feel like now it's a different mentality, a different Chicago Bears team. We're going to see how it unfolds for sure. I'm excited.
What do you want to prove? What do you want to go out there and showcase individually?
Be exactly where I am and why they brought me here. But continue to perform, first and foremost, continue to produce at a high level and put the league on notice.
Barry, you didn't seem to believe DeAndre Swift when he characterized the Bears teams he played against as one that played hard.
All the time? For how many years are
don't
we
you,
talking
Don't you
about?
Miss this? Don't you miss this high form of human communication?
Yeah, this is, the object of a question is to try to get information that you may not already possess or perhaps be surprised by the answer. And, that wasn't occurring right there. At all. So I sort of stopped paying attention. But yeah, I did roll my eyes. Sorry.
Okay.
Chris.
No, it's okay.
I feel like we're torturing Rosner with this press conference clips. He did decades of this. Now he's back here and he's got to listen to
no,
all this.
Don't feel bad, Chris. I'm really not listening. Don't worry about it.
You know, we may need an appearance from old sports writer. You ever see him? Is he around?
Wait. I just heard him. I just heard him out in the hall.
Was he there?
I'm sorry.
I just heard him out in the
hall. I'm sorry. This last hour hasn't been it.
No. Old Earth Sports. We should change it.
Oldest.
Well, this is the truth.
And perhaps still alive, but I can't be sure.
This is how it works.
Can't be sure.
I don't know either.
My dad tells jokes about old people, and the age keeps getting older as he gets older. He's now 91.
And he's making fun of old
people. He's making a 95-year-old guy goes to a sperm bank. You know that joke. Don't you?
Chris Emma does.
Yeah. I'll give it to you real quick, Chris. He goes to the sperm bank, a 95-year-old guy. They're surprised to see him come in. They give him the jar, and he goes back behind a curtain, and he's back there for 10 minutes, 20 minutes, 30 minutes. He comes out, and he says to the person at the counter, look, I tried everything. I tried my left hand. I tried my right hand. I tried both hands. I just can't open the jar.
That deserved a rim shot,
but that's
okay.
Thank you, Swerve.
And then we can eat some, if you know what I'm talking about.
Bottle.
Yeah, and now we're back to the Maui story.
It's sort of like when we're on the golf course, and my dad, and people in front of these old people in front of us, and my dad would be like, oh, my God, Zadie, hurry it up. I'm like, Dad, you're 80.
Right, exactly.
You are 80.
They got to punch down.
Yeah, no, and he looked at me, and he said, Danny, we mock what we will become.
Oh, boy.
100%.
Yeah. That's heavy.
True.
Thank you for that.
I was like, oh, yeah, thanks a lot.
I mean, I think the natural follow-up to that is to see what Richard Hightower had to say about the Bears. About the Bears special team.
I'd rather talk about eating rib.
No, but this is interesting. HT or HMAC, Richard Hightower.
Here's Richard Hightower, HMAC.
HMAC. I mean, we've got it appears we're going to have a scrap heap long snapper in Scott Daly snapping it to a rookie Australian punter in Torrey Taylor, right? I mean, and then when he's not doing that, then the snapping battery at the line of scrimmage is going to be Coleman Shelton and Caleb Williams. There's a lot of new parts for Bears fans to understand here, Chris.
Yeah, and hearing from Richard Hightower, and you're going to hear this in a sec, really broke down the difficulty it is of incorporating a new long snapper, especially at this point in camp. Now, some context, they did have Cameron Lyons as their other snapper in camp. They let him go. Frankly, I think Daly's just the better option. I think that's kind of what they saw. They ultimately made a decision, better bring in somebody new to replace Patrick Scales rather than keeping Cameron Lyons in there and having somebody they thought wasn't as strong of an option. But Richard Hightower broke down the complexities that go with that snapping battery. So here's Richard Hightower.
Yeah, I mean, it's just something we're going to have to work on. It is extremely challenging. I'm not going to sugarcoat it. A lot of people think that you just snap, hold, kick, and the ball goes through the uprights. But there's a lot of different things that play into that. The laces, the lean on the ball, the wind, how you tilt the ball can change the direction and the flight pattern of the ball. How you snap the ball can change that. How you hold the ball can change that. The steps on the kicker's operation can change that. So it's just something that we're going to have to work through, and we feel great about it. We feel great about the fact that we were able to get Scott, and they're going to work good together. We're excited about it.
Do you think, Barry, that you could be a long snapper if you were asked to come into Bears camp?
I believe that's one thing I could do without severely injuring myself.
You do, right? Because they don't have to block. They're not allowed to tackle, right? They're not allowed to run down and tackle these days. I don't think they are.
Well, that's a new rule then if they are not allowed to play football anymore.
They
I wasn't
change
aware
a lot of,
that.
Of rules.
I know the kickoff thing is very complicated, and I didn't watch any preseason games, so mm-hmm. I don't even know what that is.
But you can't touch the long snapper when their head's down. That's what the rule is. They can move down the field and
they're
tackle.
Still Thank you, Shane.
They're still allowed to play football?
If they want to, yeah. Manley never did, but the new guys can.
Did he just trash Pat Manley? Is that what just happened?
No, I would never. You're
I
not
don't
hearing
believe
things,
he would
right.
ever do that. No.
Okay. Then no, I'm not. I don't want to do that.
Okay, I'm glad I asked. Chris, all right. So good. So we heard about that from Richard Hightower, and we'll see how it develops. And tell people what else has happened in terms of the.
I appreciate you trying to get me into the conversation, Spiegel. But I genuinely don't care.
Yeah, no, I regret it.
I really don't.
Believe me, I regret it. So where are we on the 53-man roster between what the cutdowns were and now here today? We've had some changes already, haven't we, Chris?
Yeah, so the one to keep an eye on will be Scott Daly. He was signed to the practice squad today, not to the 53. So you have up until the Saturday of week one to make your determinations as to who comes down. Somebody will have to be released from the 53. Daly bumps back up. You fill out the rest of the practice squad today. Two releases from that group as well. And we'll see. You know, guys could pop up still on the waiver wire. Somebody may appear this weekend. But I think they're pretty well set heading into week one.
I could be wrong, but this sort of has the feel of the Joe Kamak, Todd Pratt conversation from the final week of spring training 1995, when Joey Reeves was trying to get me into this back and forth about who it should be. And I actually began talking to him about it and then realized what was happening and said, "What the hell is wrong with you? We're going home soon. Stop it. Finish your work and let's get out of here."
Yeah, no, that's as someone who has been a Bears beat guy at the very, very end, especially, Chris, this long a training camp with this much anticipation, the Hall of Fame game, when if we really are like three long snappers deep into the conversation, we all need our heads examined.
I like how serious it is, though. I like how serious Matt is taking
it. Thank you very much.
And I like how serious Chris is taking it when, honestly, no one listening cares.
By the way, Todd Pratt, 14-year MLB career.
Did he? I know he went to the World Series with the Mets, didn't he?
For 14 years the man played.
Joe Kamak was actually a pretty good receiver of the baseball. He didn't really do anything else well, but he did do that well.
He did indeed play for the Mets in the World Series against the Yankees. Do you have any delicious Bears nuggets for us, Chris, Emma?
I do. Keenan Allen and Tevin Jenkins were among those sidelined from practice today. Ryan Poles didn't seem concerned about either of those. We'll keep an eye on those as the injury report comes out week one. Good news was Ryan Bates appeared to be ramping up. He was dealing with a groin injury. Saw him running. He worked in through some drills with the one offense. He slid right into left guard. So that's your Ryan Bates return update. We'll see kind of where he stands next week. Scott Daly will wear number 46 on your program. Same numbers, Al Bobrovsky, Chris Harris, among many Bears dignitaries, and, of course, the great Doug Plank.
Thank you. I was about to yell at you.
Yeah, how is that not the first one? How's that not the first one mentioned, Chris?
He was having some fun.
Up for you guys.
He was building drama.
Absolutely.
Yeah, it was a comedy bit. You ever heard of something like that?
Not on this station.
If I could take a moment, too, to salute the Torrey Taylor punting. I saw a punt I've never seen before. I learned it's called a banana punt.
Tell us.
And it was from about 50 or so yards out. You kick the ball kind of like a rugby angle, more side to side. And it essentially just dropped right inside the 5-yard line. It's one of the most impressive punts I've ever seen. This is as they're going on the far field away. I got just distracted by Torrey Taylor punting. He looks pretty good. He's the real deal.
That's not a banana punt.
Well, that movie.
Bananas. I love them.
Well, here's the thing. Barry, if you don't know, they have this punter from Australia by way of Iowa who appears to have reinvented punting.
He comes from another country.
Well, no, there's a lot of Australian rules.
You don't mean like Australia, California.
No.
You mean Australia, the country.
The actual Australia.
The big Australia.
But he appears to be able to control the spin with these different style punts that he has and just make the ball stop dead like Emma is describing, or bounce and go out left, or bounce and go out right. It seems like he's figured out a way to reinvent this skill that has been around for 90 years.
I don't doubt it. He just said it was
reinventing
one of the greatest.
Anything.
He just said it was one of the greatest punts he'd ever seen in his life.
Right.
And I started laughing to myself, thinking I don't remember any great punts I've ever seen in my life, in my whole life.
Well, Cole Kmet said he has both a 9-iron and a 6-iron, and he can pull out whatever he needs.
Well, how would you, I mean, to put spin on a 6-iron like that?
That's what I thought, too. If Cole Kmet's putting spin on a 6-iron, I want to see him play.
And Barry, they drafted him in the fourth round.
They drafted the punter.
In the fourth round.
Yeah, this is great. We get to Barry about current sports events.
That's fantastic. Thanks, Shane. I care. I can draw a 6-iron, and I can fade a 6-iron, but I can't really spin a 6-iron.
But being able to draw and fade it is pretty good, though.
Well, I don't know. For me, the longer the iron, the easier it is to turn it over. I mean,
By the way, Barry, this is what we talked about when I saw you. We talked a lot of golf, so just catching you up on that conversation from 2 months ago.
Is it what really? I mean,
you were drunk. You don't remember.
You're not a golfer, though, Chris, are you?
I am a golfer. I'm an avid golfer. That was my last nugget when I got two tee times set for the weekend off.
It was clearly a memorable conversation, Chris.
All I was thinking about was Taco Bell. That's all I had in mind at that moment was, I really need to eat some Taco Bell.
Is that where you went? Did you go?
Yes.
Can I segue naturally back to Keenan Allen and his cleat?
And how much he loves the cheesy gordita crust.
his cleat issue. I'm trying to
how hard Spiegel's trying. Hey, man. This is really serious
Somebody's
stuff.
Somebody's got to, Barry.
This is radio. Because this is serious stuff. Bernsie, and we got to get to it before this segment is over.
I know, but we need your Mount Rushmore of top five elite quarterbacks.
Hold on. Bernsie's on his ninth hour of work today. You haven't hosted a show in 14 years. I got to drive a Bears report here on the Score Afternoon
it's
show.
It's happening.
And damn it, he's going to turn this Bears report around if we don't stop our hijinks.
That's exactly right. Am I supposed to believe that Keenan Allen's foot was just an issue with his cleat, like his shoe hurt or something? That's concerning, Chris.
Yeah, it sounds like he got hurt because of a cleat issue. It doesn't seem like it's anything significant. I've seen him out of practice, no limp. He's just kind of doing work to the side. Look, he's also entering year 12, but he doesn't need these last doses of practice.
Yeah,
I heard a lot of people watching this preseason game saying he looks slow out there. Doesn't look like he's going full speed, because he's not. He doesn't need the preseason. I'm curious to see him week one. I think he'll be fine. I think he's going to have a big year for this team.
All right, and you said Ryan Bates was slotted in at left guard. If Ryan Bates is healthy, does he play week one? And for who?
So, yeah, he was only slotting in with Tevin Jenkins out in some kind of limited capacity. It's more the headline is that he's healthy now and he's getting healthy. We'll see if he's full go next week, but good signs. That's your key depth in the interior.
Yeah, so Coleman Shelton, you think starting center week one at this point, right?
Yeah, the offensive line's pretty much set. I mean, left to right, Jones, Jenkins, assuming he is good to go for next week. Mm-hmm. Shelton is your center. Davis, assuming he's good to go, period.
So he's interested.
Right guard. And then Darnell Wright at right tackle.
All right, good stuff, Chris. Thank you so much for tolerating this ridiculousness.
I apologize.
Me too.
All of it.
Sorry, Chris. And sorry I don't remember our conversation, but I was overserved.
I look forward to the next one. Take care, guys.
Thank you. That's Chris Emma right there on 670 The Score. Coach Dave Wanstead is going to join this party at 5 o'clock.
I'm like Lieutenant Weinberg. I have no responsibilities here whatsoever.
But Lieutenant Weinberg.
I was on a plane from Miami in 93, and when that moment happened, I laughed out loud.
Of course you should.
And everybody around me looked at me like there was something wrong with me. When Nicholson yelled, "You, Lieutenant Weinberg!
Oh, it's dripping!
You little Jew!"
Exactly. Oh,
yeah. I laughed out loud.
Who's going to protect America? You, Jew Jewington, right?
Yeah. Oh my God, Shane!
And Weinberg's
me,
like,
"I want a break. I'm trying."
Weinberg's like, "I'm sitting here.
What do I get?
We never even spoke to each other.
What'd I do?"
We're going to talk about something that Barry Rosner actually knows about.
But he was reading Talmud when they cut to him, which I thought was a little much.
That's not what doesn't have anything to do with my tease. It's a sports thing that we're going to talk about when we come back. Spiegs and Rosner and Bernstein still for some reason on the Score.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
You're working from home. You settle in with a cup of coffee, ready to get the day started. Before you look at that to-do list, turn on your favorite Odyssey sports station on your smart speaker. We'll keep you company and bring you the latest updates from your teams while you tackle your inbox or get ready for another meeting that probably could have been an email. Power through the workday with the entertaining sports coverage you love from the local voices you trust. Just ask your smart speaker to play your favorite station.
You're listening to 670 The Score, and The Score's afternoon show has taken an interesting turn. I am Matt Spiegel, your host. Dan Bernstein agreed to work a double today, so he's sticking around after Bernstein.
It's an interesting turn. It's just Rosner.
And Holmes. And then we told Bernsey that somebody was coming mid-show and had the opportunity to dismiss him with authority.
Well, we actually asked him to leave.
Because Barry Rosner was thrilled. That was part of the selling point in getting Barry to come in via text the other
was
night.
Was that I would be leaving?
Was that, no, that
well,
he
no,
would...
I got to say, Dan, go home. Nobody wants you here. Nobody
no
likes...
No one wants me there either. No one cares where I am.
So, but Barry was very excited to come and do that part. More excited than he was to come talk to me.
Oh, boy, you.
I'm pretty sure He really just wanted to come and dismiss you. But instead, he's here. And so we have to make him talk. Bernsy, did you watch the Greg Maddux documentary on MLB
Network? Not yet. I've seen on Twitter, I've seen some of the highlights. Some of these are older stories that a lot of us have heard before.
Sure. Yeah. But there's new stories in there. There's new stuff that people did not know, at least. And there's plenty that I didn't know. And I want to ask Barry about a couple different things. But here's the thing. Barry Rosner, who was a beat writer during those early years.
And is friends with Maddux.
I was getting there.
Okay.
I'm the host.
I guess I'm not. Okay.
You're the co-host.
I don't know how to do
forgot
that.
How much everybody here hated one another. It's actually interesting to see it close up Bernsy, again.
You're sitting in the yaya chair.
Oh, that's right. That's right.
I like the facade of, you know, we're all teammates and all that stuff, and everyone hates the other
that's
guy.
That's not entirely that's not really true. There's at least two people I don't hate yet. I'll let you think about who they are. But so Barry covered Greg Maddux and became very friendly with him and has kept a friendship with Greg all these years. In fact, I texted you the other day about the Maddux documentary. That's how all this began with yes. Barry coming. And I said, would you come on the show at one point and talk about it? And you're like, oh, God, I don't know. And then you said, guess who remember that exchange?
Well, I said, you're the 489th person to say, hey, there's going to be a Maddux doc on MLB Sunday night. And I said, try to guess who the first person was to tell me that.
Right. And my guesses were as follows. I guessed Jim Riggleman.
I laughed at.
Was one of my guesses. Tom Brenneman.
Also laughed at that.
Guessed that. And Greg Maddux, I guessed.
Which was, of course, the correct answer.
Yeah, and Mitch Rosen was
also on there.
So you took a picture of those four names and sent it back to me, excited about having those four names all side by
side. Yeah, I thought those were great together. I believe my response on Mitch was, I'm pretty sure Mitch hates my guts.
He doesn't. So. He doesn't. No, he texted doesn't. Earlier.
He doesn't.
He doesn't. He wants to know if you want to host Hit and Run on Sunday. What's interesting about that is that I'm hosting Hit and Run on Sunday, but it sounds like he'd replace me with you.
Oh, yeah. Well, that would benefit both him and you, wouldn't it?
It really would, actually.
Yeah. What would that do for me?
You would get to talk to your beloved listeners. So there's the Greg Maddux story.
I do miss the listeners.
Good. And they miss
really?
You. They do,
some
yes.
of them. Some of them, yeah.
Bernsy.
But not like the weird ones at the remotes? Remember? Like,
no.
Yeah, okay.
No, no.
All right, because you remember.
No, I can think of a few
yes. okay.
that I would not want to see again.
Mm.
I didn't think, Matt, sorry, did you want to ask me something? Because you're taking a long time to get there, honestly.
You're not wrong. He's not wrong.
This is like...
Barry,
I have Greg
Maddux related questions.
I miss the days of the hosts who asked the 3-minute long questions combined with several premises and then finally, right? With a comma, right? With a question mark at the end?
Right.
Yeah.
Yep. Matt Eberflus in over here, right? Yep, right, right, right. We're gonna do that, right?
But please go ahead. I was just going to say that I didn't find there to be very much new in there, at least for me.
Sure.
I did love the Bonds stuff, the stuff where he and Bonds went back and forth looking on their iPads, talking about specific pitches in a specific at bat. That's gold.
Hmm.
I mean, you're talking about two generational players there. You know, if one hadn't done steroids, he would have been certainly considered one of the top 10 players of all time. Maddux, a top 10 pitcher all time. It's gold. I love listening to that. That's stuff we used to do in the locker room. Used to stand there while a Maddux and a Sutcliffe and a Dawson and a Sandberg and an Osenmacher and a Bielecki would, a Dave Smith, I believe dead or alive, Dave Smith.
Dave Smith, I think dead.
And listen to them break down in a bat. George Bell and Sandberg once talking about one specific pitch at Shea Stadium for 15 minutes, where Sandberg kept his hands back on a changeup and took Ron Darling deep, and I mean real deep. That's what used to be. That was the joy. There wasn't a lot of joy in that job, but that kind of stuff was special. I thought that stuff, if you haven't seen it, it's mostly at the end, Bonds and Maddux talking about this one particular bat. It's great stuff. I was not included. When Maddux told me about it, he said, they asked for some names of people. And I believe that I'm not allowed on MLB Network going back to the Bud Selig days, I'm pretty sure, because I remember being booked and then canceled. like in a span of a few minutes.
That's amazing.
But I thought it was good. It did bring back a lot of memories.
Well, the one aspect I did want to ask you about in regards to it. Well, there's a number of things, but when Maddox,
take your time. I got nothing but time.
Thanks,
Matt, buddy.
Maddox leaves in free agency to Atlanta after a dalliance with the Yankees as well. But the way that story is told there,
very poorly, is the way that story was told.
Okay,
there.
Because I have a lot of residual Scott Boras anger, well, and this made it seem like Larry Himes and the Cubs completely butchered it and insulted him. And it made me angrier, wondering if there should be more, even more retroactive anger towards the Cubs than there has been.
This is 100% on the Cubs, on Tribune Company, on Larry Himes and Stanton Cook. And it's a fairly long story, but I'll give it to you in 30 seconds. The December before that, the Cubs offered Maddox 5-25 in December of 91. By the spring of 92, they weren't even talking to Boras and Maddox. At the All-Star break, Maddox makes the All-Star team. At the All-Star break in San Diego, they sit down and they say, what's the new offer? And Larry Himes says, well, you've never won 20 games or a Cy Young. Why should we pay you more? I mean, forget about what he had already done, which was spectacular for a guy his age. He was 25 at that All-Star game, okay? 25 years old, pitching 250 innings a year and winning 15 games or 18 or 19, whatever.
And then at the end of this season in question, he wins 20 games
and
a Cy Young.
He wins 20, he wins the Cy Young and dominates the Cy Young voting and then goes to free agency, and they basically never spoke to him.
Because he said in the doc that they gave him the exact same offer.
He was still trying to come back. He still wanted to come back. The day I got married, that Saturday morning, I got calls. I got a call from Maddox and from Scott Boras, and I said, "You guys are killing me. I'm getting married today." And he's like, "Well, they want us to come in for a press conference to announce that you're not coming back." And I was like, "Why would you come in for that? That you don't hold a press conference for that."
Oh my God!
They don't.
That's the dumbest thing I ever heard.
Well, they were dumb people, Dan. These were stupid people.
They wanted Boras and Maddox to come in for a press conference announcing that he was leaving,
that he wasn't coming back. But what they did was they spun it so well. If you go back and read the Tribune or the Sun Times or probably a columnist from the Daily Herald, Maddox was getting killed in this town. I can remember Mike North, and I like Mike, so this is
when they signed Jose Guzman.
Sorry for criticizing Mike on this, but I can remember early in that 93 season, North on the air saying, "Maddox got shelled again last night. I love it." That was the attitude in this town. I was the only one that defended him, and Greg Maddox never forgot that.
Huh.
He hadn't done anything wrong. He did everything they asked him to do, and then they never upped their offer. They signed Guzman. They signed Candy Maldonado. They signed Willie Wilson. They signed Dan Plesac. And they were so proud that they spent that money. They let Dawson go. They let Maddox go. And they were so proud that they had used that money on all these different players, all of whom sucked, by the way.
There was a separate contract for Willie Wilson's massive wang, too. that could not be handled under the current contractual structure.
For anybody who doesn't...
I'm sorry I brought that up before.
And any of the listeners who might not realize... Maddox wins the Cy Young that year with the Cubs, then goes to Atlanta, wins three more in a row.
Yeah.
So four Cy Youngs in a row, one of the most dominant stretches of all time, and the Cubs lowballed him and butchered the free agency and pawned it off like it was Maddox and Scott Boras' fault.
Yeah, I mean, he got considerably better. He had a really good year in 93, and then in 94 and 95, that's when he started doing the Koufax kind of stuff. Those were the... like 1.5, 1.63 ERAs kind of things in relatively shortened season.
But not only did the Cubs butcher it, they successfully turned the fan base against him.
He was booed on opening day here at Wrigley Field when he pitched against Mike Morgan on opening day. And it was really one of my first experiences with the way the media can be manipulated, and the way that a media just decides that's a narrative and we're all going to jump on board with that. Hmm. You see that an awful lot today in the way that so-called journalism is practiced these
mostly
days.
Mostly on national TV shows, on FS1, in my opinion.
I always thought it was
horrific the way that they made the town turn on him. when all he wanted to do was come back. Hmm. So he signs with Atlanta for $500,000 more a year, 27 for 5 years. Yankees had offered 37. He didn't take it. Kathy was much more interested in a better place to live in terms of, you know, family at that point. They had young kids. So I thought it was really bad, and I thought it was kind of gross the way that the media all jumped on board.
And the Scott Boras disgust and the Scott Boras bad relationship with the Cubs that lasted in this town for decades and decades has some seeds right there in that event.
If you say so, maybe, but this really didn't have anything to do with Boras. Now, maybe it was portrayed that way. I don't remember
that. It was. It very much was.
I had very, very long conversations with Matt. I think, Matt, I might have told the story on Hit and Run. I don't know. But there was a game in Cincinnati in, I want to say, late July. It was right before we went to Houston in 92. You can look it up on Baseball Reference. And I was still trying to get all the particulars from both Boras and Maddux on all this because it was complicated.
Hmm.
And I kept going back to both of them. This one night in Cincinnati, Maddux is starting that night. And I go, dog, I'm sorry, but I have more questions. We sit down in the back of the locker room. It's like 2 hours before the game. We sit down on the floor, and an hour and 40 minutes later, the pitching coach walks up and says, Greg, are you going to pitch tonight? He goes, what time is it? He goes, it's 6:40. You want to warm up? Maddux stands up, looks at me, and goes, good thing I know what I'm doing. He goes out and throws like a 3-hit shutout in Cincinnati.
I'm looking at it right now.
6-hit shutout. You know, it's 1,000 degrees. You know, it's a launching pad. Yeah. You know how it.
July 22nd, 1992, 34,000 in attendance at Riverfront. He throws a 6-hit shutout, strikes out 4, walks 2.
So on the off day, I go to Houston and I'm trying to write this story for Friday, and I'm still talking to Maddux and Boras constantly. I don't remember, Matt, how this had anything to do with Scott Boras. I mean, this is one of those cases where the player wanted to come back, and the team didn't want him. They truly didn't want him at that point. Larry Himes thought he was smarter than everybody else. He didn't want him back. He thought they could use that money. Look at all the players they got for that money.
And you remember the soundbite in the very early days of the score? Greg Maddux, Jose Guzman.
Yeah.
Jose kept getting compared, and he didn't like it.
Jose Guzman, nice guy, by the way. And if he hadn't gotten hurt, I mean, I heard in Texas he was a fabulous pitcher. I mean, really good. Steve Buschel told me that the guy had just electric, magical stuff. But he wasn't very good, and then he got hurt, and then he just collected a lot of money from the Cubs for doing nothing.
Great stuff from Barry Rosner.
So do you remember the Bagwell story that is told in the...
Yes, there are other ones like that.
We got to take a break. We can revisit that for a little bit. And then there's a Cubs comp to this Bears season that I want to get your guys' thoughts on. Dave Wanstead at the top of the hour with Spiegs and Bernstein and Rosner on 670 The Score.
It was just trying to understand how hitters see the ball. And then what can I do with the ball to try to trick them? Well, I'm going to throw a changeup. I know it's not worth a unless I've thrown a low fastball for a strike. I have no way to trick the hitter.
Yeah.
Kind of like, you know, you can't go fishing without bait. You got to bait the hook.
They don't call the professor for nothing.
Man, just so much pitching wisdom. I always loved the Warren Spahn quote about hitting is timing. And pitching is upsetting timing. Once said that to Maddux on the air, but the Verducci thing that he references in there in that doc about how Maddux was trying to make the balls look like strikes and make the strikes look like balls. That's pretty good. That's a pretty good way to go about it. Barry, we want to play this story that Bernsey was referencing because Chris Tannehill has it already because he's Chris Tannehill. This is Eddie Perez, Maddux's personal catcher, who they used to use at the expense of Javi Lopez because it was that important. Eddie Perez talking about Greg Maddux and a pretty noteworthy at bat.
We were regular season, and we were winning like 8-0. It was easy game in the 8th inning. And he told me, don't throw anything inside on Bagwell. Call everything outside. And I said, okay. I think it was somebody on. And he wants to go inside. And I go, okay. You know, it's your game. So I went inside, called inside, and Bagwell hit like a 1,000-mile.
Long, oh boy, Bagwell, way back.
And I was mad, and I was like, what are you doing? And he goes, they got a good team. We got a good team. We're going to play them in the playoff. He's going to wait for that pitch. 3 months later, we're in the playoff, bases loaded in the seventh. We threw 3 straight changes and struck him out. And I was walking to the dugout. He goes, hey. And I look at him. He said, you remember? 2 months ago? And I said, no, I don't. He was looking for that pitch, the homer that he hit. And I was like, this guy. It's how smart he was.
Oh, is that awesome? That awesome. So he sets Bagwell up by giving up a homer during the year so we could strike him out in a big moment in the playoffs.
Yeah, I heard numerous stories like that over the years. I saw one of them at Wrigley Field. I think it was 94 or 95, and it was Jose Hernandez. And he intentionally gave up a 2-run homer onto the catwalk to Jose Hernandez, throwing a pitch with the most absurd windup you've ever seen. I remember looking down at third base at Tony Muser, who had his eyes up at the sky, like, what was that? And I asked Muser afterward, I said, see what I saw? He said, yeah, I don't know what that was. I said, I bet I know what that was. I think that was on purpose. Because he's thinking in his mind, I'm going to use that against him someday. And that was one of those years when he had like a 1.63 ERA or something. He just gave up 2 runs on purpose. I mean, that's how absurd it was. I remember one year we were in Atlanta and we were sitting in the dugout. And I said, I watch all these guys in the Cubs clubhouse. They all have these books. And this was before laptops, long before. And some guys would write down every single pitch, exactly what happened, exactly the result, everything. And I said, it seems exhausting to me. And he just laughed and goes, why would you even keep a book on hitters? Today's a different day. Today's completely different. My changeup's different today. My curve is different today. My slider's different today. My location's different today. My speeds are different today. His feet are different today. Nothing's more important to me than the hitter's feet. How are his feet reacting to what I'm throwing? If you watch him, if you watch Maddox, you'll see he's looking at a guy's feet. He's not even looking to see where the ball, knows where the ball's going. He's looking to see what the hitter's feet are doing.
It's usually what the catcher's job is, to read the feet and the weight balance of the hitter, but the pitcher's doing it in Greg's
case.
He's
like, no, I don't keep a book. Everything's different right now. Everything's different today. I need to know how he's reacting to what I'm doing right now.
If you're wondering what these voices are, yes, that's Barry Rosner. Yes, I'm Dan Bernstein, and that's still Matt Spiegel. And the texts that are coming in that are some combination of bewildered, bemused, entertained. I just love this when I have to answer it. It
says,
I turned on the radio a few minutes ago. I've been in meetings, and I heard Barry Rosner's voice. So why are they playing old Rosner clips? Did Barry Rosner die? And yes, he did. He suffered a horrible, painful death.
Remember when we had the long conversation about being assassinated, and did I qualify for assassination?
No.
So even now, no. I can't be assassinated?
No, Barry fell off his house. He was putting up siding, and he shouldn't have been doing that, and he was eaten by coyotes.
All right, well, yes. None of that is true. What is true is that Dave Wannstedt is joining us next on 670 The Score.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
You're working from home. You settle in with a cup of coffee, ready to get the day started. Before you look at that to-do list, turn on your favorite Odyssey sports station on your smart speaker. We'll keep you company and bring you the latest updates from your teams while you tackle your inbox or get ready for another meeting that probably could have been an email. Power through the workday with the entertaining sports coverage you love from the local voices you trust. Just ask your smart speaker to play your favorite station.
Trying to figure out what to eat for dinner yet again?
With Norsides and bouillon as your not-so-secret ingredient, you can skip the drive-thru and do dinner at home. Nor taste combos provide a menu of delicious, affordable, and well-balanced meals that you can prepare in 30 minutes or less. Visit nor.com to get quick and easy recipe ideas for your home-cooked weeknight dinners. It's not fast food, but it's so good.